So I'm Nicolas Skwarnek, and I'm going to present you Don't Share, Don't Lock, Large-Scale Software Connection Tracking with Chrononat. So this is joint work with Fabien André, Stéphane Gouache, and Antoine Monsifro, my colleagues at Technicolor. So the context of this work is Internet Access Network. So in your Internet Access Network, you have, and in your home, you probably have a CP, a customer premise equipment, which is a residential gateway, cable modem, and all these names. And your device connects to this equipment, and this equipment sends the packet over the access network, which is the network of the ISP, and up to the internet. And so this device, they typically run a number of services, and the one that consumes most of the resource is actually the firewall and NAT, the packet processing services. So actually, you have millions of devices for an ISP, have millions of such devices deployed in the wild. So the issue with this is that actually these devices have been targeted recently by security attacks. For example, DNS Changer or Deutsche Telekom also suffered the hack. And it's very important to keep them up to date. And so there is a trend, which is the VCP, for virtual CP, virtualization of this device, that wants to simplify the software running on millions of embedded devices to allow easier upgrades and better integration with cloud systems of the ISP. And so also, the goal is also to provide a better visibility into the home network of the user for the ISP in order to provide new services like secure IoT or also remote troubleshooting. So what does this mean? This means that we will move away some services from those millions of embedded devices into the access network of the ISP and put a middle box that will handle packet processing features and other services for this. So the goal of all this is really to simplify those devices. So the question now is, as we want to handle millions of users, what can we use to achieve this? So the simplest, the naive approach could be to say we'll take the existing software, which is generally Linux or OpenWRT, and run it into a VM or a container into the data center of the ISP. Yet this doesn't scale for millions of users. It's not possible. So that's something that we rule out. So what remains, we could go and buy existing hardware appliances from well-known vendors. So those are two example appliances with their capabilities in terms of networking. So in terms of networking, the first appliance and the second appliance, they are in the range of 60 million packets per second. That's the number of packets that they can handle, and which amounts for typical internet traffic to 100 gigabits per second or 140 gigabits per second. And the cost of those boxes is typically $65,000 or $200,000. So there is a trend currently, which is to replace those dedicated hardware equipment with just commodity servers, like Intel servers. And so what's interesting is that a $30,000 Xeon server is able to support 400 gigabits per second in terms of NIC card. It has enough PCIe lane to support as many NIC cards. And this amounts to 180 million packets per second. So, but this is just hardware. So to actually use this hardware, you need software. And if we look at what is available today, for example, I take two examples. First, a VM by a vendor that provides the firewall NAT services. And it's capped to 10 gigabits per second. So if you want higher bandwidth, you have to buy the dedicated hardware appliance. And also, for example, a proposition, which is a stateless NF, which was published at NSDI 2007, they target 10 gigabits per second on this kind of hardware. So the question is really, could we achieve 180 million packets per second per server, or in terms of performance per core, 4.5 million packets per second per core? So this bring us to the challenge that we want to solve with this paper. We want to build a middle box, which is a box that supports firewall and NAT services for residential networks, so for ISPs that have millions of users, using commodity of the shelf hardware. And for this, we'll take commodity of the shelf hardware and we'll put as many NIC cards as possible into these servers so as to achieve the highest density. The next step is really that we want to run as many users as possible on each server, and since one server won't be enough to support the full scale, we need to be able to have a system that is able to handle multiple servers. So this boils down to actually building a system that is efficient, reliable, and scalable, scalable across cores and across servers, and that does layer 4 connection tracking, because of NAT and firewall require you to keep track of every single TCP or UDP connection of a user, and to do this for millions of users. So just quickly, to recap for those of you who know this, and also to introduce this to the other, the best practices for high-performance networking software are the following. You really need to avoid context switches because it's an I/O-intensive application, so if you use your typical kernel, you will have a lot of context switches. So you have to use kernel bypass systems, so in our case, we use DPDK. Also, you have to avoid lock and share because your budget to process each packet is very low and cross-core sharing is expensive even if you don't explicitly lock. The last thing is that to have an efficient system, it's better to favor a run-to-completion implementation model, which means that in your software, when you receive a packet, you immediately process it and transmit it without buffering, writing it to memory, nor blocking. And it shows, in the end, applying all these principles, which are rather straightforward, everywhere ends up being non-trivial because it conflicts with every single feature that you want to add into your system. And what we'll show in this presentation is how can we build our system so that we follow this principle, and more precisely, how once we receive a packet at a core, can we process it locally without accessing something that is non-local. So I'll start by the first feature that we want to achieve, which is reliability. So this will give us the basic architecture for our system. And we take all our customers here, and so we split them. So, and we have plenty of customers. We have a few servers to support this. So we split our customers into shards. We group our customers into shards, and we assign for each shard a master server and a slave server. Naturally, since we want to have reliability, we will replicate the state from the master to the slave to ensure that the slave can take over the role of the master if ever the master fails or departs. So a few interesting observations regarding the our choice for replication. So some systems have proposed to build stateless network function, and to do this to rely on an external database. That's something that we choose not to do. We choose to use an internal data structure, a hash table, not an external database, because this allows us to have a much faster insertion and lookup rate. Actually, the data structure that we use achieves 450 million lookups per second on 18 cores. Also, all accesses are non-blocking to a local data structure are non-blocking. That's something that we could not achieve with an external database. Regarding this choice also, typically your typical database tends to favor consistency. If the database at your bank really wants you not to lose money, and they really favor consistency. But if you look at network, networks are unreliable by design or by specification, and applications will recover if ever the network fails. Yet, the issue is that if you start to have short unavailability period or even delays in packet processing, the user will immediately notice because it will increase their latency. They will immediately notice that the internet becomes unresponsive. So what we favor is really availability, and more specifically, we ensure that the slave, the master, process packets without waiting for acknowledgement from the slave. And this allows us to have an efficient lockless replication protocol and mechanism. And in particular, we use batching to improve performance, and we ensure that we use the same thread for both packet processing, but also management tasks like replication to ensure that there is absolutely no sharing between threads. And also the traffic is not interrupted during slave initialization using support from the hash table and so on. So starting from this system, what we want to achieve is really efficiency. So to achieve efficiency, the first principle that we follow is that we apply sharding to the core. I mean, we don't map a shard to a server, but actually we map each shard to a specific core. So we bind each shard to a single CPU core to enforce share nothing. And so this ensures that all packet processing and management is done by a single thread and that we don't need to share data structure across threads and across cores. And so how this reflects in the system? In the system, it means that to the network, we'll expose each core as a distinct entity. So we provide each core with an identity on the network. So each core will have its own MAC address, own IP address. And this also allows us to have a single mechanism to address across cores, but also across servers. So we get natural support for multiple servers. So the next step now is, since we have a system that targets in the order of hundreds of gigabits per second, how do we implement load balancing, this traffic steering, given that we target all high performance? So we cannot do it in software. So what we do is we push it to existing hardware. So we use top-of-the-rack switches and server class NIC to entirely offload the load balancing. So how do we do this? So actually, we rely on IP routing. So we implement this sharding by giving IP routes, and this sharding is controlled dynamically using BGP. So why do we do this? It's because physical layer 3 switches are much more efficient than virtual switches. So we wanted to avoid any Open vSwitch or related solution. So the next part is that actually IP routing allows us to have a precise control on reverse traffic too. Because what we want to do is that we want forward traffic from the customer device to the internet to go to a specific core, but we also want the reverse traffic from the internet to a specific customer to go through the same core. So we need to have a lot of control on the way sharding is implemented in hardware. And so IP routing allows us to have this control. And it also allows us to precisely control to which device the traffic will go after a failure, so the failover pass. So the last point is that traffic is highly asymmetrical in residential networks. So typically, users send requests, and then they get resources from the internet. So to allow an efficient usage of the hardware, we actually use VLANs rather than dedicating physical hardware to one side of the network and the other side of the network. And this allows us to achieve symmetric usage using both RX and TX in full duplex mode. So the benefits of our design are the following. First, the distribution across servers and across cores is identical, so it simplifies the implementation and allows naturally to handle multiple servers. And it also allows us to ensure that performance scales linearly across cores, but also across servers. So the second benefit is that we have dynamic load balancing, which is included in the design. So we have dynamic routing and replication. And so this allows us to swap roles between master and slave and to rebalance the load between servers. And so this also allows us to provide elasticity by adding or removing servers as the demand evolves. Because if you look at the typical internet traffic, so on this graph, so it varies a lot across the day. Unused resources represent up to 75% of the resources. So there is a lot of potential savings in terms of energy or cooling. So before going to a few evaluation results, I wanted to present the benchmarking tool that we use for evaluating this system. So we have a large-scale system, which is multi-server, and which can handle a lot of packets. So how to benchmark this? We need a large-scale traffic generator. So we also use a software-based system relying on DPDK. And to build this multi-core and multi-server benchmarking tool, actually, we follow the same principle. So the principle of sharding to the core, pushing the load balancing to the server class NIC and to the switches can also be applied to beyond Middlebox to benchmarking or testing tool. And so a few results. So Linux is, we use it as a comparison because it's something that is used in a residential core project, which is a project that also considered this very same use case. So each user is isolated into a namespace, and the performance that we achieve in this case is Linux with 12 cores achieved 3 million packets per second. So Chrononat, our system, achieved 77 million packets per second thanks to all these features. So in terms of scalability, so this curve shows the scalability. On the y-axis, you have the millions of packets per second processed. On the x-axis, you have the number of cores. And globally, the Chrononat scales linearly with the number of cores. And interestingly, our objective, if you remind, was to achieve 4.5 million packets per second per core. And so Chrononat is well above this objective. So another feature that is important is the reliability feature. So we want our system to be available. So what happens whenever we inject server, we departure into the system, so we shut down servers. So this leads to service interruption. So if we look at this, we see that most service interruption are below 200 milliseconds. So it means that user won't even notice because no typical internet round trip time is in the order of 100 of milliseconds. And typical network timeouts are way higher. So all these service interruptions, they won't generate any error from the point of view of the user. There will just be packet retransmission. So to conclude this talk, what we built is a resilient distributed middle box, and we built it using commodity off-the-shelf hardware, plain commodity switches and commodity servers. So the performance that we achieve is 77 million packets per second on only 12 cores. And so this is above the objective that we set in the beginning. And what's important also is that we do this while ensuring that we can recover from failures automatically without user noticing and without any operator or human intervention. For this, we use a cost-effective N+1 redundancy mechanism and the redundancy and dynamic load balancing that is controlled by BGP allow to achieve elasticity. So beyond this system that we build, actually, we believe that there are a few reusable design elements that can be transposed to other systems. So the first is that to achieve shared nothing and achieve high performance, we expose each core as a distinct entity to the network. So we don't expose servers or NIC, we expose core to the network. And we push per-core traffic steering to the networking equipment, which are very efficient for this task, so NIC and switches. And these principles were applied to building the multi-server, multi-core benchmarking tool that we use for benchmarking and testing this system. So, thank you for your attention, and if you have questions.
Any questions?
Hi, thank you for the presentation. So I have a quick question about the consistency. Seems like you are favor availability, but sacrifice some consistency yeah. between SNPs. So do you have any mechanism to ensure that you are going to achieve the eventually consistent?
Sorry, this echo.
Do you have any mechanism to ensure the eventually consistent? Just that although you are not consistent in certain point, but eventually it will reach a consensus point.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Actually, it's not, basically, it's not necessarily eventual consistency, because what happens in our system is that we only have a single master and a single slave. So if the slave departs and at some point there is no slave during load balancing, and so if the master departs, fails at this point, precise time point, then the connection that were established may be lost. So there may be loss in the system, but in very specific and unlikely cases. So,
Saurabh Bakshi from Purdue University. So you said that you now expose each core rather than a node to the network element.
Yeah.
So this means that the number of entries that the network elements have to deal with have been magnified 24x, 32x, number of cores that you have in the server. Does this affect the limited resources like the lookup tables, for example, in your networking elements?
Yeah, actually, that's why we use So basically, IP routing tables on top of rack switches, they support in the order of 60,000 routes, 16,000 routes, maybe more, slightly more for just the latest generation. So it's below typical routers, which support hundreds of thousand routes, but it's still enough to implement our system, because we shard our systems in something like 4,000. If we shard all our customers in 4,000 groups, then we just need 8,000 routes to route traffic in one direction and the other direction. So the sharding is precisely made for this, so that we don't have to have a route per customer, but to have a route per group of customers. And actually, the issue is more, actually, the number of routes is proportional to the number of shards, not to the number of cores.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, great work. I'm Liam from University of Washington. I have some detailed questions. The first, in your evaluation, it says 77 million packets per second. How large is a packet? Do you?
So we did this test for 64 bytes packets.
Okay.
Actually, the performance is not that dependent on the size of the packets, and this allows us to ensure that we are CPU bound and not network bound in our benchmarks.
Absolutely.
And so the performance also is just, if we increase the size of the packets, it remains the same until we become network bound, and then.
So in each of the configuration, how many NICs you have in one server?
How many NICs?
Yeah.
So in our configuration, we have different servers. Actually, the biggest servers had 7 NICs, 7 10 gigabit ports available, mm-hmm. and the other had 4.
So you do steering from a NIC to a particular core using DPDK, is that? How's the, maybe I missed it, but how do you steer packets to a core?
So how do we steer actually to a specific core?
Yeah.
Actually, these server class NICs, they have multiple queues, and they have some features that allows to expose MAC VLAN filters. So typically in Intel NIC cards, it's called VMDQ, and that's just a precursor of SRIOV. So generally, all cards that support SRIOV, PCI SRIOV,
yeah.
that just support a mechanism that allows multi-queue and that allows to expose a specific MAC address per queue,
so
per group of queues.
So it's through DPDK, is that right?
Yeah, it's DPDK, but it could be done within Linux also.
Thank you.